Good morning. We want to welcome everybody to the Ag Market Network monthly teleconference. It is Monday, August the 15th. We are brought to you by Bayer. Leading our cotton panel today will be Dr. O.A. Cleveland. He'll join our panel of Joe Nieper, Dr. John Robinson, and Kip Butts. O.A., thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Pat. Good morning to all of you, John, especially you, since I didn't speak to you earlier this morning. Thank you. Just try to recap a little bit of where we are with respect to this supply-demand report and what we've seen the last couple of weeks, this roller coaster ride we've been on. We are certainly all well excited for the most part to see these prices up a bit higher, certainly from a grower perspective. Though some are a little bit stunned that the market came back as much as it did, though we really shouldn't be surprised about that. We saw a number of things, and we were able to get out the word that we were going to have a significant sell-off or should expect one. So we're back about where we thought we would be. But it's very important, I would suggest, at this level that we begin to try to hold a little firm right now. Cotton prices, of course, were on the defensive all last week as the managed fund speculative long position reached a record high, which has historically been a very strong technical indicator that we would sell off. And we did get that from the prior week's high of about 78.5 cents, which would be about 2 weeks ago now as far as measuring weeks. The market lost a full 800 points before holding on at the week's end and this morning's high, or this morning's current trade. We lost that full 800 points nearly, but if we've found support around 70.5 cents, and it's the 70, 71 cent level is a key point if prices are in fact going to be able to hold above 68 cents. I think that's very positive or very probable that we have a good bit of meal buying sitting here around 70 cents, 70 cents plus actually, and that should give us good support. But the bullish fundamentals that help lead prices to where they are still remain somewhat in place, although I guess a little bit quieter now that we've had some good moisture. But likewise, the same bearish factors are remaining in place as well. So this trading range we've been in a good while, this new trading range we've been in just in a couple of weeks is still very much in effect. I think we'll be able to hold there. The USDA supply demand report for crop and crop production that came out last week, I would suggest to you should be taken as somewhat neutral to supportive. USDA did increase its estimate of 2016 U.S. production and carryover as well, but it also reported higher world consumption and lower world carryover. So I think those are the two factors that give us a sense to have a little support in the market continued. USDA increased the estimate of the U.S. crop 100,000 bales up to 15.9 and moved that same 100,000 bale increase to its carryover position, leaving exports at 11.5 million and domestic use at 3.5 million bales, those, of course, being unchanged. The marketing year carryover estimated at 4.7 million bales here in the United States, but as I'll read the numbers, I think USDA will adjust the 2015-16 point year exports up another 100,000 bales now after the weekend data, and it'll effectively take the carryover back to 4.6 million bales, just a point estimate. The slightly larger U.S. crop that came out through the crop production report and the USDA supply-demand report, I think, was based on the excellent crop progress that we've seen throughout the Mid-South. All the Delta states, average yield was 1,000 pounds or better, and that's a very strong yield indicator for the entire Mid-South. The August survey being the first objective field survey of the year, I think some people are apt to say that it's always the highest. That's not always true at all, but sometimes the market thinks that, and just our little discussion beforehand tends to suggest that crops might still could be a little bit larger, but it's still very early in the season, and a lot of things could yet happen. We'll certainly receive some good moisture in Texas, but at the same time, the crop's been under a lot of stress, so we'll just have to see how much fruit loss we have there. Regarding the world estimates, the foreign estimates and the remainder of the world, the USDA did take world production down 1 million bales to 101 million. Basically, that came about through reductions in China and India of about 500,000 bales. And, of course, as I indicated, the U.S. was up, but there were also reductions in Mexico and a number of other places. The report also began to adjust the historical data somewhat, particularly for India, but only just very lightly. And I think there's still got to be a reckoning there with adjusting Indian stocks lower. The total reduction in the USDA report for beginning world stocks was down 1 million bales, and then ended up basically with world consumption estimated marginally lower at 100, but still 111 million bales is basically the same, down about 35 or so million bales. The world ending stocks were lowered 1.7 million bales down to 89.6, so the numbers are finally down below 90 million bale carryover, which is still very excessive, very large. But we're still looking for a more significant and meaningful reduction, as I've indicated a number of times, with respect to the Indian stocks. Stocks outside the U.S. and China are now projected, according to USDA, at 36% of total use, which is tightening a little bit, but somewhat similar to last year. But more importantly, to me, the stocks' machine-picked high grades continue to decline based on this forecast for 2016. That would probably be just my look at the numbers. We may want to get into them a little bit deeper, but the concern that I have now happens to really focus back on the idea that growers will, in fact, have a chance to see 75 cents once again, and I think we will. But more importantly, again, with respect to that is I think that we, with the run up to 80 cents or nearly 80 cents and the concern about going to 80 cents, it talked suggested to a number of mills that they might go ahead and begin to increase their substitution of the acid-based chemical fibers for cotton, and I think we're seeing that, and we'll just have to see how that plays out. So, guys, y'all take it and make something meaningful out of what I said, please.
All right, let's just open it up for anybody that'd like to comment. Well, Gerald?
Well, I was just looking at some numbers here, and I think the more, Owe mentioned something about the machine-picked harvest. That's actually up a little bit from last year, but by 2.5 million bales. But that's due entirely to the United States. Which means all other countries, were actually down a little bit. The U.S. is up 3 million bales and versus a year ago, machine-picked production is. I'm sorry. I was looking at a wrong column. It's up about almost 4 million bales. So, U.S. is up 3, rest of the world's up a million bales roughly. Not any real horrible tightness there. But when I look at U.S. competitors, the major U.S. competitors in the export market, and I look at their exportable supplies, we're down to the lowest level since 2009, 34 million bales versus, almost 38 million bales in 2015. And that's probably what gives USDA some confidence in leaving that export estimate at 11.5 bales. So I think that's the most bullish factor right now going on for U.S. cotton is the potential for just a large amount of exports. Probably why that, even in spite of some, I didn't even really think that, Friday's report was negative, but I suppose the market needed some excuse to sell off and correct some of that large spec long position, managed funds, which, you know, interestingly enough, actually ended up getting a little longer as of the week ending last Tuesday. But and we've seen really very little liquidation since a week ago Monday, very little liquidation this last week. So not really sure what's going on. I think it certainly feel like the speculators are somewhat comfortable. So a lot of question marks left out there. I think OA mentioned in his weekly commentary that, you know, weather, I think, is still very much of a concern in everybody's minds right now. And, you know, the crop's not made until it's harvested and put in a barn. So we probably have another 45 days of nervousness regarding the overall crop size.
Okay. I'll chime in on that, Pat, about the hedge fund position. It's really striking when you look at the buildup in there, or just the association of prices over this last, going back to about February. But, you know, the last time we had prices under 60 cents was when those hedge funds were net short, and then they spent all of April, May, June in a position that varied between zero and 50,000 contracts, and that's when we were in that long-standing, you know, 61, 2, 3, 4, 5 cent trading range. And then it was only beginning in July, they shot up from 48,000 to 68,000 to 88,000, and that's been the jet fuel under this rally. Just the way those are, the price movements and the buildup is pretty clear. But I think Gerald alluded to this. It leaves me wondering, you know, what influences those hedge funds to change their positioning is as unpredictable as anything. I mean, because it can be influenced by outside forces just as much as cotton and weather and fundamental forces, you know, just anything related to financial worries or Brexit or who the heck knows. So it seems like their position and their decisions just adds more risk than normal in the price outlook.
Well, yeah, and I'll mention this, now, since you brought that up, it came out, it's been coming out for a while, quite a bit of money has been coming back into managed futures. It rivals the 2009 levels, and part of some of this support perhaps is that, or the amount of open interest growing for that group is you just got a lot of money looking at managed futures as a way to diversify portfolios and do better. Kip,
I was just going to mention kind of. Brought up what kind of dictates or gets in the mind of these traders. I think we've been in a pretty strong weather market for quite some time now. I think the West Texas dryness has certainly encouraged spec funds. To your point, the money was coming in anyway, just into commodities in general, but you pick specific markets, and cotton was one that we were in a weather market on, both in the U.S., and we had the Indian monsoon was not performing well in Gujarat and in parts of Rajasthan. So I think there was the incentive to get a hold of this thing, and they actually pushed prices up. I think John made a good point. That's a lot of what was moving this market. So when we got the rains in West Texas and when the monsoon started performing better up there, I think we sometimes try to overthink it. I believe we were in more of a weather market than a lot of people thought we were in, and quite honestly, when you get the rains, prices move down a little bit. I think we had them move part of the position out. I agree with Gerald. I don't know that we have really changed that position dramatically, but I think a lot of people needed to get out, and then we had the mills buying some cotton, as always said, in or around that 72, 71 cent level. And I think they're going to continue to buy as this thing starts to go down a little bit. They'll just keep fixing prices. That provides our underlying support, I think.
Let's go to John. John, talk to us about weather in West Texas and the recent rains.
Well, OA made some mention of this. You know, there's a big question mark about what's the trade-off. And, you know, we had hot, dry, stressful conditions in July, and then we got started getting rains at the end of July and in the first week of August, you know, million-dollar rains. But they're not widespread. You know, you talk to folks, and they got, you know, maybe a few inches, maybe as much as 3 or 4 inches over a county or a part of a county, but it's not everywhere. So it's, I'm happy for those people that received it, but it's sort of a setup for an analyst, a tough situation, because it's going to be spotty. There's going to be pockets of really good production, and then not. And that's sort of just overlaid on the typical situation of uncertainty. You know, they come out in August, they go out and they field sample, this is NASS, and they count a bunch of fruiting forms on a bunch of small plants in West Texas. Well, you know, what that means in September could be a surprise one way or the other. It's always that way, and now you've got this moisture effect, which being spotty, it means that we're going to have an average of a whole wide range of conditions. Now, having said that, there's more rain coming. This stuff that's slopping over from the east is kind of flowing out there. So there's moisture popping up hither and yon. So we'll just have to see how it takes out. I think it still will be beneficial where it falls out in West Texas. So,
okay. Hey, John, I know it's kind of difficult to do this, you know, but kind of guesstimate, what would you reckon would be the amount that actually benefited from these rains, percentage-wise, for West Texas? I know we're spotty and isolated, it makes that almost an impossible question, but would you have some sort of off-the-cuff thought about what percent of that might have actually benefited from these spotty rains?
You know,
impossible question.
Well, yeah, it is an impossible question. You know, there were people that were telling me when we were in New York that they needed something to happen that week or it was over.
Mm-hmm.
And whether those people on those spots got it that week, I don't know, and whether they were a week off, so some of it might have been cutting out or getting ready to, but I'm sure some of it was planted late enough, particularly you know, the Haskell rule, they caught some of that 1-3 inch rain in some spots over Haskell County and the surrounding counties. So, you know, if that was late enough, that dry land may yet still, you know, benefit from that, stretch it out a little bit and still benefit from it. So I'm not answering your question, but...
Well, as I said, I kind of started by being an impossible question anyway. I didn't know if you had a swag out there or felt comfortable doing that, so... And I understand completely. Thank you.
OA, we've had a lot of farmers asking the question, what do I do up here as far as pricing cotton goes? What's your advice to farmers?
Well, I think where we are now, and I'll call that 72 cents, realizing that without the benefit of a screen, we're probably at 71, 70, 70, 80, something like that. I would say where we are now and up to 72 cents, I go ahead and get a third of it done, a full one-third. If we climb back towards 74 plus, 75, I think we have to go to a full half of our crop being priced. It's time to do that. For growers that have already priced as much as a half, back up to 75 cents, I think we go ahead and add another quarter. And then you'll still have 25% left over. In fact, this market goes higher. So the guys have talked about, Pat, if I can extend that question just a little bit, the strictly being in a weather market and whether or not whatever weather we get, and John, you may want to amplify this or correct me for that matter, but now that West Texas has a little bit of moisture in the ground, we have to go back and remember there is a wealth of moisture underneath. And it just carried that crop, can take those roots just another inch deeper or so, to speak, and find all that huge moisture and make for a huge crop yet.
Okay, any other thoughts?
We haven't talked much about it, but, you know, the area outside the U.S. for cotton would drop substantially in India and China, to the major producers. We've had an awful lot of inclement weather in China, in the central part of the country. A lot of flooding in there. That crop's had a bit of problems. The difficulty with that is every time I've decided that the cotton crop in China drowns, they wind up with a record yield or something. So that's kind of a difficult one to call, but there's some challenges there. India, however, the lower area there. Part of it was due to late monsoon. And I'm reading articles just last week, and I spoke to a fellow there who said, well, maybe we didn't lose quite as much area as we thought. And that crop may be in a little better condition than it was 2 weeks ago or so. So it's just something to keep in mind. I think someone, I believe it was John a minute ago, or, no, I think it was Gerald, said that we got about 45 days of this kind of growing condition we got to be concerned with. So I kind of agree with OA. If this thing bounces just a little bit, I'd be ready to get some stuff fixed on the farmer side and not risk. I don't think I'm a little more conservative maybe than OA is. I might fix a little bit more of that, get that cotton sold and leave 10 or 15% out there kind of on the hope that we get another rally.
Kip, if I may, Pat, excellent point. Not disagreeing, in fact, agreeing. Here we are sitting at 71 cents basis December. We're in average high territory. May not be, you know, the grower may say, well, I don't like 71 cents. Well, we are in average high territory, so it's time to like it.
You know, Kip, you talked about every time you thought China was going to struggle, they come up with a record yield. I think that's part of the problem. I mean, I do not believe that the Chinese stocks are as high as they are now. You can believe the state reserve stock numbers, but I think those stock numbers outside of the reserve, you know, are just in a huge state of flux, and I don't think that they are nearly as large as USDA is suggesting they are. So I'm having a real tough time, you know, with USDA's ending stock numbers in China versus, you know, other reported stock levels in China between the commercial and the industrial stock levels. Unless, you know, I suppose you could have a bunch of commercials out there just not reporting, holding any cotton at all. But I something tells me that there's less cotton in China than we all think there is.
You might be right about that. China is an enigma. I think the numbers are not very good out of there. And I think there are some folks that are not reporting cotton they own for their own sort of speculative purposes. And also, you know, I kind of question the stronger mill use numbers that USDA has been using the last couple of months with these polyester prices as incredibly cheap as they are against cotton, and the fact that a lot of the exports, India, as a matter of fact, right now is trying to get a change in their taxation system to make polyester fibers more competitive with cotton, simply because the demand outside their export market is requiring a higher percentage of synthetic fiber. So I wonder if their mill use might be a little strong too, which doesn't say much about the ending stocks, except that we got more questions, I think, than we have confidence in a lot of the numbers, regardless of where you get them out of China.
Okay. Any other comments before we go to our price projections? Let's start out west with – go ahead.
I was just going to say, USDA came out with 7.8 on that Memphis Eastern crop. That's large. That's probably – so everything's going to have to go perfect from here on out to achieve that those numbers, don't you think?
Yes. We've got to continue with the good cotton weather that we've had. But, again, I mean, the phenomena of every state at 1,000 pounds or higher, that just hadn't happened. Mississippi's sitting over 1,300 pounds per acre. And then granted, that cotton is on excellent land.
All right. Let's go to Gerald. Gerald, give us your thoughts on how high we can go, how low we can go.
You know, I think we've seen how high we can go. I don't think that 78 cents is – I don't think we've seen the last of 78 cents, but, you know, we're going to be, you know, biting our nails until we see it again, I'm sure. And on the downside, you know, I'm kind of a believer in this 200-month moving average. It provided a lot of resistance prior to us breaking out above it. And right now it's sitting just above 6,700. So I think the 200-month moving average will provide very good support. You know, if you were nervous and wanted to buy some, you know, just some protection in case this thing just fell apart, I'd probably look at a 67 or 66 cent put, because if you broke back down below there, I think, you know, it'd run pretty hard. But in the meantime, 67 cents on the low side, 78 cents on the high side.
Okay. John, give us your thoughts on that.
Well, I'll just be slightly more pessimistic and say 65, 75.
All right. Kip?
I'll widen that range. I like the 65 cents on the downside. That might be a little too pessimistic, but I think 78 cents is, I believe we'll probably see that again. So I would go from about 65 to 70 cents.
All right, OA, give us your price projections.
Well, let's say I've probably given two already, and they were different, so why not give a third that's different? I'm just tempted to think that we can hold right here at 70 cents. And that's probably, I have to admit, that's more hope than anything else probably. But after that, down to the, rather than Gerald 67, the 68 cent on the bottom, though I think we'll have a little bit of trouble getting below 70. So 68 cents on the bottom. I'll hold it at 78 and a half on the top where we've been and failed. We had all that speculative push to the upside and we failed still, and that was in the midst of the discussion of the India and West Texas problems. So I'll stop it at that point. So 70 cents to 78 and a half.
Okay. Any other questions? Anyone? Any other statements anyone would like to make? Okay. Well, let's wrap up our meeting for today. We want to thank our sponsor, Bayer, for making this possible. Special thanks to Dr. O.A. Cleveland for being our special guest speaker. Also to Gerald Nieper, Dr. John Robinson, and Kip Butts for joining us on our panel. So that's it. Thanks for being with us today. For the Ag Market Network. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pat.